Good evening, everyone. Goblin here. Unfortunately, I was not able to finish my intended video due to some unexpected water issues in my apartment, which have caused me to be temporarily displaced. But I still wanted to put something out today. So, this is something I did in my spare time and set aside. Basically, for every show I put together, I make a list of things that I come across along the way as I'm doing my research and writing my script and stuff. Different things I find interesting or stories that I liked or that fit the theme, but I didn't have time for or weren't quite strong enough to feature in the main video. So when I have extra time, I intend to record these leftovers and maybe potentially one day release them as extra or bonus content or on rainy day situations like today. So we are going to listen to two of these pre-recorded leftover episodes I did. I will say, I like to think my audio quality has improved since recording these. I'm not exactly satisfied with the way they sound, but I did put time into them, so I don't want to just throw them away. And I did want to put something out today. I like being consistent with my uploads. Anyway, first we are going to listen to the On the Ceiling leftovers, and these are some additional stories in the vein of my very first video I did titled On the Ceiling. If you want to listen to that, you'll have to go to YouTube because it is not on a podcast app library, being that I only started uploading to podcast platforms a few months ago at this point. But basically, it features stories about faces and weird creatures that show up, you guessed it, on the ceiling. So I hope you enjoy it, and I should have my intended video out next week, which will be about fairies. As always, I greatly appreciate everyone's support, and I hope you all are doing well. So without further ado, let's get started. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining me tonight for some leftovers. Tonight I am going to be continuing the theme of my very first YouTube video. And the theme for that video was On the Ceiling, where all the stories featured sightings, encounters with paranormal entities, unexplainable happenings that all occurred on the ceiling. Looking up and seeing a strange face in the ceiling, a strange creature. So, I don't really have too much to add as far as, you know, folklore or anything like that. But I'm still fascinated with occurrences of entities, beings, faces, whatever it may be, on the ceiling. I just find it to be really, really spooky. And I've found a handful more encounters. So I'm going to read 8 or so stories for you. Let's get started. The first one comes from a website called Castle of Spirits, and this is where people submit their firsthand paranormal experiences. This story took place in Virginia and was submitted September 1997. This is an old website. Still going today, but has an archive from, I think, 1997 is when it started. Around then. Anyway, this story is called The Face. I have several stories to tell, but the first is about the house I grew up in since I was a child. I have the gift, or let's just say I can sense and see things others can't. As a child, I was terrified to sleep in my own bedroom by myself. I saw a face on my ceiling right above me. It was the face of a man. It always scared me, and whenever I looked at it, it seemed to be staring right back at me. Looking at it made my blood run cold. But what frightened me most was that as I got older, I came to think it was just some sort of weird shadow, so I moved everything in my room around. That night, it was still there, so I tried again. I put a poster over it that night, and so now it appeared beside the poster. I resigned myself to just ignoring it. A few months later, my grandma, who I lived with at that time, decided to do a little remodeling. As part of that remodeling, she decided to have all the ceilings spackled, which should have covered up the face with a layer of white, rough, plaster-like paint. It worked for about 4 days, but then the face started to seep through the spackle, so I finally decided it was some sort of ghost. Our house had one other one, and she had never really bothered me, so I just decided to let it go as that. But I always wondered who the ghost was. Several years later, we got a visit from a man who had grown up in the house before it had been sold to us. He stated that the house was well over 93 years old and had been in his family until it had been sold to us, and that his uncle had died in my bedroom. So, that's pretty interesting that they tried to debunk seeing the face on the ceiling because, of course, seeing faces in the patterns of plaster, wood, whatever kind of material, that's very common. That's called pareidolia. I'm sure you're familiar with it if you have an interest in the paranormal because it comes up quite a bit as, you know, a possible explanation for some stories and experiences. So the witness themselves even thought that's what was happening. They were just seeing a face in a shadow that was cast on the ceiling. So they tried moving around the room, but it was still there. And even putting a poster over exactly where it was, the face appeared right next to it, painting over it. Very interesting. And they said it was a man's face, but they don't go into too much detail besides that. Like, was it the same color as the ceiling? Did it look like a face bubbling out of the ceiling that was made up of the same color of the ceiling? It's not like it was skin colored or something. You know, those are the details I would like to know, because in my mind I'm just picturing a man's face poking out of the ceiling, but of the same material as the ceiling. And I'm picturing like a popcorn ceiling, because that's what I have. So they categorized this as a ghost. If you saw this, would you categorize it as a ghost? I can see why they did categorize it as a ghost, especially after learning that someone, a man, had died in that room, and they said it was a man's face. But I just think it's interesting. That is such a bizarre way for a ghost, you know, if you're thinking of the energy of a deceased person, that's such a strange way for them to manifest, to just be a face sticking out of the ceiling. I mean, it's a strange way for anything to manifest. It's just strange. It's very bizarre. That's what I like about it. So, let's read the next story. This one was actually submitted to me by email by someone named Var. They were kind enough to send me an email with a bunch of links to text files they have made using a website called Pastebin. And they said that they have, like myself, have been just kind of collecting creepy stories from the internet since 2007 or 2008 and throwing them on these text files. So they said, I'll just read what they said from Var. They said, "I wanted to get in touch with you to give you some of my own collection of creepy stories. None of these were written by me or anyone I even know. These are all personal accounts their posters claimed were true. And whenever I found a particularly weird or creepy one, I just copy and paste it into a text file. So I've just been continuing to collect them from all over the internet since. Purely for my own reading enjoyment, so unfortunately, most of the info as to where or when I found the stories and whatever forum username posted them has been lost." So, I really appreciate that, and I clearly it's the exact same thing I do. It's kind of the basis of my whole channel, is collecting creepy stories that interest me on the internet. So, I really appreciate it. I have not gone through all of them. They sent me a lot. I got a lot of material to work with, but this story is one of them. So let's have a look at it. First, I am a pure skeptic and rationalist. I have no explanation for this story, nor will I attempt one. A few years back, a friend of mine and I, who we called Tacklebox, went over to another friend's house, who we called J-Bot. The living room is on the second floor, and the ceiling is made of a very weak particle board-like substance, flaky and painted white. On one of these ceiling tiles, there was a scrape that ended with a large hole. It sat just over where J-Bot had placed his TV. So, the three of us are hanging out, watching a really bad B-film about giant insects on the Sci-Fi Channel, when Tacklebox glances up and says, "Yo, is there a spider in that hole?" J-Bot and I look at him and start laughing, his obvious attempt at scaring us because we were a little high and watching a film about giant insects was a complete failure. "No, guys, I'm serious," he says, but there's some gravity behind his voice and expression. So, J-Bot and I, sitting on the floor, stare deep into the hole, looking for something resembling a spider. The hole was probably large enough to put two fists through, and I was staring at what may have been loosely hanging fabric draped lightly around the inside of it. Then, suddenly, what manifested due to its movement was something resembling fingers, crooked, bent, and jointed, that scurried backward into the hole. Panicking, we found ourselves on the other side of the living room, frantic for an explanation. What we saw was not a spider. And even if it was, it was larger than even a tarantula. We weren't sure what to do. So they slowly approached the hole, and I took cover behind the love seat, peeking up over the back support. That's when I saw the craziest thing. It stuck something out through the hole. It was light brown and gray, with lighter gray spots, but it resembled a periscope, but rounder and stubbier, spinning around, scanning the area. My imagination struggled with what I was seeing. My brain just couldn't come up with any explanations. I actually began to accept the fact that it was extraterrestrial, because I had nothing else. Then we grabbed a piece of cardboard and some courage, rushed to the hole, placed the cardboard over it, taped it down, and then retaped it for good measure. Then we named the ceiling beast Lawrence. That cardboard stayed up there for years, with warnings all over it. If anyone so much as pretended to take it down, anyone present for the initial accident would dart from the room and downstairs. Again, I have no explanation. So, I have to say thank you to Var once again, because that is a particularly strange and unique and interesting story. That's a little different from the faces on the ceiling that we have been dealing with up until this point. Periscope actually comes up in a report from the Fairy Census, but how many encounters with periscopes do you hear? And the creepy, crawling, spider-like hand. Well, that does remind me of my disembodied hands video that I have. Something similar, I think, comes up in that. But it also reminds me of something from the video game Elden Ring. If you're familiar, there are these disembodied, huge hands with way too many fingers and a bunch of rings on all the fingers, and they're kind of gray colored and they crawl around and attack you, of course. I was kind of thinking of that when I read this story. Very creepy story. Again, we don't know the source of what, you know, if that was posted to Reddit or some other forum, who posted it, when it was posted, but really enjoyed that one. Speaking of the Fairy Census, the next account comes from the Fairy Census. It took place in New Hampshire sometime between 2010 and 2019, when the witness was in their 50s. The time was between midnight and 3 a.m. I did not necessarily believe in fairies until I saw this. Never thought much about them. I was lying on the couch inside my home. It was after midnight. The light source was from the bathroom light and the TV. I saw low light approaching along the ceiling in the hall, which leads to the living room. I saw several fairies dancing very near the ceiling in the hall, approaching the living room where I was. I'm positive they did not know I was there. There was no color, but they were emitting a very bright, whitish light. Each little body was creating its own light. The little bodies would have been able to sit in my hand. They were not walking or dancing or whatever on the ceiling. They were in an upright position, with their feet going down towards the floor, their heads facing up towards the ceiling. The little bodies looked perfectly formed, and I believe they had wings. They had something that looked like wings. They were kind of pretty. I was scared. I saw maybe 5 or 6 of them, but I am positive there were more coming behind them. But because of where I was lying, I could not see further down the hall. I must have moved. The one in front was startled, and all of them appeared to go back in the direction they came from, fast. Then nothing. It has been about 1.5 years, and I never saw anything like that again. I have the very distinct impression that I was not supposed to see them. I have seen no so-called fairy circles anywhere outside or inside. I looked. It was the most remarkable thing I've ever witnessed in my life. I can imagine it would be a very remarkable thing to witness in your life. A troop of fairies walking, floating, dancing, upright near the ceiling. The witness reported that the fairies' demeanor seemed joyful until they saw me. There is a question included when filling out the submission form for the fairy census that asks, what made you think that this was a fairy sighting rather than a ghost, an alien, an angel, etc.? In response to this, the witness writes, it was not a ghost. I feel strongly it was not an alien. I feel strongly that it was not an angel. I know it was fairies. The questionnaire then asks, what are fairies? The witness writes, good question. I do not know, but they are very aware of us. There's a consciousness. Some additional comments she writes are, quote, 2 people within 1.5 miles of my house have also seen fairies, but they did not look like this. So I guess this area is a cluster. As with anything that is unexplained, I am quite sure that no one will believe this. However, in addition to the friends down the road who had a very different encounter with a single tiny being about 1 foot high, this one sounded kind of scary. They could tell by looking at him. I know someone else in northern Massachusetts who also saw a fairy about 1 year ago in her blueberry bushes. It sounded similar to mine. We all live within 1/2 hour of each other. Someone else saw a fairy being in an old cemetery in New Hampshire in the Manchester area. They're all over the place. I will repeat an earlier statement. I believe I was not supposed to see them. I don't know what happened when they did not immediately know that I was there, but they were gone when they saw me. Please do not share my email with anyone. Only a few trusted friends know about this. Of course, the fairy census is completely anonymous, and part of the reason for doing so is so that people can feel comfortable in sharing their experiences when they otherwise wouldn't. And I'm so glad people are doing so, sharing their stories, because not only does it serve a purpose in the academic research that Simon Young is conducting, but it also creates a sense of kinship and validation among people who have had strange encounters like this. And it brings out the mystery, wonder, and magic that fills our world, but so often seems out of reach. Technically, those fairies weren't on the ceiling, but they were near the ceiling. So I think it counts. And it's a great story. Let's read some more. Next, I'll read a few from Reddit, and these will all be from the Paranormal subreddit. And this one was posted by Red Spotty PJs. It's called The Man on My Ceiling. The clearest memories I have of what people might call a ghost was when I was a child back at my parents' house. A couple of times I'd wake in the night and feel something sinister. Something watching me from the corner of my ceiling. My mind was receiving all the normal information you get when you look at a person. Visual appearance, body language, intention, how they feel. But I couldn't see this person at all. He was short or crouched above me and smiling as if he enjoyed making me feel uncomfortable. I knew that if he/it could have hurt me, he would. I'd leave the room and sit out on the landing, which felt remarkably safe, next to the atmosphere in my bedroom. He'd never follow me out, always staying on the ceiling. One night, I woke to find both of our cats, who'd never sleep together usually, lying at the bottom of my bed, both bolt upright and staring at the same spot in the ceiling. I did wonder if it was mice, but it freaked me out at the time. Now, anyone who has a cat knows that they are known to do that creepy thing where they stare or follow something that you can't see. My cat does it all the time. I don't know if that's because he's losing his eyesight or if he's actually seeing something that I can't. So that was kind of interesting that they didn't physically see anything. They kind of had an image of a person in their mind's eye crouching on the ceiling. And this reminds me of a story I read in, I believe it was my second video I made called Backwards Knees. And I think it was called Corner Creeper. And it was a little man that was crouched in the corner of the ceiling. I would always watch this child, and their knees were bent backwards so they could kind of fit right into the corner. But this child wasn't afraid of this weird little man in the corner. They felt like it was watching over them. Definitely creepy. There's something about corners to me that there's something about them that seems to incite paranormal activity. It's a weird little spot, the corners. Next, I'm going to read another story from the paranormal subreddit, and this one was submitted by Future Ghost. I've been wanting to share this for a while now. I am hoping that sharing it will be therapeutic for me. When I was about 7 or 8 years old, my family moved into an apartment. This place was so crazy haunted that it still makes me sick to my stomach 22 years later. Almost immediately after we moved in, I started to sleepwalk all the time. I would always wake up at the top of the stairs. No one else would be awake, but I could hear what sounded like 2 people quietly having a conversation in our kitchen. And there was always this presence at the bottom of the stairs that I would feel. It terrified me. I had this feeling like it was trying to lure me down the stairs so it could get me. But it was so dark that I never actually saw anything. Once I felt like I could move, I would run back into my room and hide either under my own covers or in my sister's bed. In maybe mid-1999, my younger sister and I were in our parents' room watching Mulan. The credits were playing and we were jumping up and down on the bed singing along. I suddenly caught movement by the door and looked over to what I can only describe as the most terrifying thing I have ever seen. There was a girl on the ceiling looking back at me. I could only see her face, hands, and hair, but she was upside down and looking into the room from the hallway. The only way I can describe her appearance is like the girl from the Grudge movie, except there wasn't any sound coming from her. She was completely silent, just looking at me and my sister, and at that moment, all I could do was scream. I screamed so loudly that my sister started screaming because I had startled her. I looked away and jumped off the bed. My dad came running in, yelling at us for being loud, and I was so confused. He had walked right under this creepy girl and hadn't noticed her. I tried to tell him what I saw, but she was gone. He didn't believe me, and neither did my mother, until she later saw the same girl while home alone. These aren't the only experiences I had there, but they are the ones that I still often think about. It's interesting that people have experiences seeing girls with long black hair crawling on the ceiling without having that actual frame of reference from the movie, The Grudge. Why is that? I mean, and also, I'm not sure where The Grudge pulled that imagery from either. It's obviously a very creepy and sinister image. And actually, there's a comment under this story that says, creepy things are way creepier when they're on the ceiling. And I agree, there's just something about things being on the ceiling that are unsettling, I guess because they're not supposed to be there, especially people. People definitely aren't supposed to be on the ceiling. So that is unsettling off the bat. And that is the reason we are gathered here today, that creepy things are creepy on the ceiling. Speaking of, we are not quite done with ceiling crawling ghost girls. We've got another story to read from the paranormal subreddit, and this one was submitted by Insomniac Oop. Back when I was around the age of 14, I lived with my dad, two older brothers, and my older sister in this small house we used to call the greenhouse. It's had a fairly big backyard for our four dogs to enjoy, and a regular-sized front yard, but a small living space inside the house. Although old, it was a cozy place, and felt quite welcoming as a whole. One night, all my siblings were in the boys' room, my brother's room, playing on their PlayStation 3, and I, for some reason, didn't want to be in there, so I went into the living room. This was a little unusual for me, because when I was younger, I was very scared of being alone in the dark, and all the lights were off in all the rooms, and I was sitting on the couch playing with my sister's DS. The light from the screen was the only source of light. I'm sitting in the corner. To the left of me is my brother's room, and straight in front of me is the doorway to the kitchen. In the middle of playing, I just turned and pointed the screen at the doorway of the kitchen to light it up so I could see, but there was nothing. It wasn't like a forced impulse that made me point the light, but more of an unconscious movement. After no more than 20 seconds passed, I did it again, pointed my sister's DS to the doorway, but this time I saw her. She was a young girl, crawling with her hands and feet across the doorway, upside down on my ceiling. She had long black hair that dangled. Her eyes were dark red, but her body was very pale, and it looked as if her body glowed a little bit. She stopped in the middle of the doorway like a deer caught in headlights. I could see her whole body as she turned her head, and we made eye contact. I don't know how long I stared at her, emotionless, but after some time, I shot my hand down to hide the light, and after a few seconds, I pointed it back up, and she was gone. I remember that I kept asking myself over and over again, why didn't she scare me? Why didn't I feel scared when we were making eye contact? It confused me a lot. After sitting there for a bit, I called out for my sister to go to the kitchen and turn on the light. The light switch was right under the spot the little girl was crawling around. She was skeptical, but went and turned it on for me anyways. After she did, I got up to investigate, but after finding nothing, I confessed to what just happened. Till this day, I believe she was a good spirit or ghost because I felt no fear while staring at her, only emptiness. I don't think she meant any harm, and I've never seen her after that. I've experienced many more paranormal events, but not in the greenhouse. Interesting that they came away from such a seemingly frightening experience, not really being scared. And they mention in their story and in the comments that they don't really know why they weren't scared. I think imagery from movies like The Grudge have solidified the fact that most people find little girls with dark hair crawling on the ceiling very creepy. I guess they probably would have been without the movie too, but now they definitely are. Anyway, that's enough of them for now. We will leave the creepy crawly little girls in the past. Let's move on to another story, and I believe this person's username is Motherfucking Chicken Eater. This happened when I was 14. My mom and I had moved into a new house that wasn't very new at all. We were told an old couple lived there before us, and the husband had died in the house some years back. Naturally, we cleaned the house from top to bottom, including the yard spaces in the front and back. The backyard was rather long and had a veggie garden. The garden was overgrown, and we could still see some old tomatoes withering away. It was a big garden, and we were told the old man loved to garden and took good care of his veggies. I wanted to keep it, but Mom wanted a full backyard. One day, my mom and I went out to demolish the garden. We pulled up everything and threw away all of it, and burned some. The night we tore up the garden, I remember waking up in the middle of the night to the side profile of an old man spread across my ceiling. It was like a heat-censored image, kind of greenish-yellow hue. I could make out the hat, nose, chin, and the rest of the head that covered my whole ceiling. It was like a projection of some sort. I felt my body tense up in fear, and I quickly turned over and tried to sleep on my stomach. I had a feeling it was the old man about his garden, and I started to apologize profusely until I fell asleep again. I'm 33 and still get a little anxiety when falling asleep on my back with my face toward the ceiling. He never showed up again. This one is a little bit different from other on-the-ceiling stories that I've read, in that instead of an indent coming out of the ceiling or a figure on the ceiling, this one was like a flat, illuminated image, which I thought was very interesting. All right, I have one more from the Humanoid Encounters subreddit. It was submitted by Dead Eye Dunk. When I was very little, I was sitting on my dad's lap watching Teletubbies. Then I started staring at the ceiling above me. He looks at me confused and asked, "What am I looking at?" I say, "There's a man on the ceiling." Obviously, my dad was a little confused. He asked me what it's doing, and I say, "It's just watching me." He asks me to describe it. I say, "He has a big mouth with big sharp teeth. He's crawling on the ceiling with his head on backwards." He also had really big eyes. My dad is quite concerned by now, but tells me it's okay and to watch TV. I get huge goosebumps when I think of this. The annoying thing is, I can't find anything else online about it. All other experiences are sleep paralysis, but I wasn't asleep. Kids, especially babies, love to stare at the ceiling. And the way they do it just makes you wonder how often they are actually seeing something there. Same with cats. Babies and cats are very similar when you think about it. This last story I'm going to read is quite short, but it actually comes from a comment under the On the Ceiling video on my YouTube channel. It was posted by Jesse Lee, and it says, "When I was 5, I woke up in the middle of the night to a face on the side of my bed. This face was morphing from one face to another, kind of like in the Michael Jackson music video for Black or White. I turned over to face the wall, and when I turned back around, it was still there. For a while, I just stared at it. Before I knew it, I was waking up in the morning. I'm 42 and still think about it often." So creepy and strange. I'm particularly interested in these stories where the faces are protruding from surfaces, be it ceilings or walls. There was actually a really good story from the original video I made with a face coming out of a hanging plant. I think it was smiling too. The plant, the pot like rotated and then there was a face in it, if I remember correctly. Really liked that one. Anyway, that's all I have for now, but I've already started saving more on the ceiling stories, so we're not done yet. Definitely let me know if you have one. Thank you so much to Jessie Lee for sharing her experience in the comments. I really, really love to hear people's stories and thoughts, so please leave me yours if you have any. Thank you so, so much for joining me tonight, and maybe tonight, if you're feeling particularly brave, just take a look up at your ceiling before you go to sleep and see if anything's there. All right, next we'll be delving into the disembodied hands leftovers. Again, the original video that this is paired with is available on YouTube, but it features first-hand accounts of people seeing disembodied hands and arms, often in weird colors like pink and red and green. This is one of my favorite paranormal encounter motifs, disembodied hands. And I can't say exactly why that is, why it fascinates me so much, but I think it's just because it's so strange. Now, I haven't personally had a disembodied hand experience myself, but it is weirdly common. So let's go ahead and roll that now. Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me. Tonight, we are going to be talking some more about disembodied hands. In the main video I did, we read some stories, some firsthand experiences involving disembodied hands, and also went over some occurrences of hands in folklore. And tonight, we're going to be doing much of the same. Some stories, a little bit of folklore, a little bit of miscellaneous reading, but there are just so many stories and sightings and occurrences of disembodied hands. It's quite strange, but very, very interesting to me. So, if you're interested in that, let's get started. This first one is from a book called Creepy But True, True Tales for the Campfire by Joshua P. Warren. This is one of a series of books the author has published compiling true paranormal stories people have sent in to him. And this one was submitted by Tangerina Arena from Pennsylvania, and it's called The Hand. When I was 8 years old, back in 1995, I was living with my grandparents in their rural home in Enon Valley, Pennsylvania. They had a spare room that was used as my playroom. All my toys were in there, including my Barbie dolls and Barbie Dreamhouse. One day, I was in the playroom playing by myself while my grandma was sitting in the living room and my grandpa was at work. Suddenly, I saw a disembodied hand appear out of thin air over the top of my Barbie Dreamhouse. The hand was much larger than my then child-sized hand. It was closer to an adult's hand. If the hand had a visible arm or body attached to it, it was hidden behind the dollhouse, out of my view. I was frozen with terror as I watched the fingers of the disembodied hand rapidly dance, and it quickly moved back and forth from one side of the dollhouse's roof to the other. Finally, I stood up screaming and ran out of the room to my grandma. I never saw the disembodied hand again after that, but I will never forget it. I often wonder if it was a ghost haunting my dollhouse that day, or perhaps some kind of trickster entity visiting me. I'll never know. All right, so that's how we are kicking off today. A little dancing dollhouse hand. Like I said in the main video dealing with this topic, I'm just so fascinated by these stories. I know that they are somewhat repetitive and similar because, well, they all deal with pretty much the exact same thing, a disembodied hand. But I don't get tired of them. I just find them to be so interesting and strange, and there's so many of them. It's a pretty common experience, oddly enough. So, we are going to read some more firsthand accounts and see what else we can get our hands on. I think the witness to this story does bring up an interesting point at the end when they say they wonder if it was a ghost or some sort of trickster entity. It begs the question, what are these hands? Naturally, I don't think there's a sweeping general answer for every single story we read, but I really don't know what they are. And that's kind of the intrigue for me, I guess. Highly strange. Highly strange. We love it. Next, we are going to read an article on The Haunted Attic, a website run by Fiona Dodwell, and features, quote, all things creepy, from reviews of horror films to interviews with leading figures of the paranormal world to exclusive insight on upcoming paranormal shows. This particular article is called Inhuman Hands, Spirit, Myth, or Prank. It begins like this. I think I must have been around the age of 10 when my dad first recounted a terrifying experience he had whilst playing on the street with friends as a child. The story had the air of eeriness and mystery to it, and the tale quickly glued itself into my mind, feeding my imagination over the years. It happened back in London in the early 1950s. My dad met up with some friends during school holidays and would often mess about in town, wandering about, buying magazines, exchanging sweets. It was during one particular day that he was in town, far from home, and began to feel the urge to use the toilet. Taking the long walk back home to pee didn't seem so enticing, so he headed over to the nearest public toilet while his friends waited outside. I'm guessing it was much like any other public toilet. Smelly, dirty, walls coated in colorful graffiti. My dad stepped into what he presumed to be an empty toilet stall. All of the cubicle doors appeared to be open, from what he recalls. He stepped inside one. Whilst he was in there, he heard someone close one of the doors next to him, unperturbed. After all, why shouldn't someone else come in to use the facility? My dad flushed, let himself out, and began washing his hands at the sink. It was whilst he was doing this that he felt someone grab his ankle from behind. He spun around, startled, and looked down. What he saw frightened him. It was an extremely large hand. The skin looked almost gray, and there was hair across the back of the hand. It was reaching out from behind the locked cubicle door and grabbing firmly the back of my dad's ankle and leg, trying to pull him. Unnerved and shocked, he shook his leg free of the large, inhuman-looking hand and ran from the toilets, terrified. He fled past his friends, saying he needed to go home. He never returned to that particular area again. He never forgot the episode. My dad, all those years later, never did feel able to explain away the experience. Of course, time can distort memory, and certainly in childhood. One's imagination can flee to places of unreality in the blink of an eye. Yet, my dad feels absolutely certain about what he saw, and attests strongly to the realistic appearance of the devilish hand that tried to grab him. All right, so I really enjoyed that story that the author of this article, her dad, relayed to her about the large, gray, hairy hand reaching out from under the bathroom stall. Now, this could just be an actual person reaching out from under the stall, although why they wouldn't open the door instead of reaching out from under, I'm not sure, unless they were in the middle of some sort of task. The lack of details in this story naturally leads one to speculate, but like Fiona said, her dad is convinced of the supernatural quality of this hand. A little further along in the article, she mentions the Hairy Hands of Dartmoor, a bizarre but somewhat well-known UK urban legend regarding disembodied hands grabbing steering wheels or handlebars of motor vehicles and running people off dark, lonely roads, causing crashes that sometimes result in death. And even though it fits right in with our theme tonight, I'm not really going to go into the hairy hands right now. Some of you may already be familiar with the tales, but if not, there is a lot of information available to read about them. Instead, let's touch on another folk legend. This one belongs to the Iroquois or Haudenosaunee tribe. It's called Oneaton, or Dry Hand, also known as Dry Fingers. While, according to some, Dry Fingers is just a boogeyman who haunts lonely roads and attacks those who traverse them, to others it is a disembodied, mummified hand and forearm that flies about of its own accord and touches people with its, quote, withered, dried finger. According to nativelanguages.org, Dry Fingers is a vengeful apparition that only punishes badly behaved people, especially those who speak evil of the dead, sow discord, or pry into other people's business. The punishment inflicted by the touch of Dry Fingers is essentially debilitating or even fatal illness, and is one of those good old-fashioned tales seemingly used to scare people into good behavior. There are, of course, many severed hand legends and stories. There's the Hand of Glory, the classic Hookman urban legend, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with. If you aren't, or you need a refresher, here's a basic retelling of it from a thesis paper by Scott White from Utah State University, published in 2014. It's called Severed Hands as Symbols of Humanity in Legend and Popular Narratives. The night is young. A young couple is at a local lover's lane, far away from the town. As they sit in their car, listening to the radio and doing what young couples do, a flash comes across the radio.
A maniac killer has escaped from the mental ward of the local prison. Easily identifiable by his hook hand, this killer was last seen near Makeout Point. Lock your doors and don't leave the safety of your homes until this vicious killer has been apprehended.
As the announcement cuts out, Barry White begins singing again on the radio. The girl is frightened by the announcement, but the boy wants to continue doing what young couples do. Finally, he is persuaded to leave. Partly by the clear terror the girl is feeling, and partly by the metal-on-metal scraping sound he hears coming from his rear passenger side fender. He quickly starts the car and pulls away, while the tires screech and kick up a spray of loose gravel. When they arrive at the girl's house in town, the young man jumps out of the car to open the passenger door for his date. As he reaches for the young woman's door, he notices a bloody metal hook hanging from the car door. Everyone knows that one, right? Different versions of this urban legend have been circulating as early as the 1950s, with one version being present in the first Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark book. There's also movie depictions, urban legends, or is it urban legend? You know the one, from the 90s. I Know What You Did Last Summer, even Candyman, in a way. The paper I mentioned and read from a minute ago focuses on the appearance and use of severed hands in urban legends, folktales, and popular culture, and goes into various explanations on the subtextual implications of the function they serve within these narratives. Quote, "Ultimately, my archival research into legend variants, folklore theories, and psychology studies has led me to see the hand as a narrative symbol of humanity that is highlighted by a discussion of hands outside the usual context of a human limb. Severed hands express perceived loss of humanity in legend." It's true that hands carry great physical and emotional significance to us. For many of us, hands play a crucial role in the way we interact and literally manipulate the world. They are also used to express love and affection. We hold hands with lovers, children, and dear friends. We shake hands to greet someone. I found this part of the essay to be interesting too. Quote, "Psychology provides a sampling of reasons legends commonly feature severed hands. Neurologist Oliver Sacks has studied hallucinations in numerous forms. Individuals who have lost a limb commonly report feeling as if the amputated body part is still there. Medicine and psychology refer to this phenomenon as a phantom limb, referring to the hallucinatory nature of the sensation. Sachs' research has shown that phantom hands are the most common variety of phantom limb, appearing more often and much more persistently than phantom arms, feet, or legs. Some individuals who have had most of the forelimb amputated have reported experiencing a phantom hand without a phantom arm to connect it to the physical shoulder. Sack attributes this greater likelihood to the greater brain activation people experience when using their hands than when using any other body part. The presence of the phantom limb and relatively overwhelming occurrence of phantom hands demonstrate that hands have a hardwired importance to humans outside of social and narrative conventions. While this particular research involving phantom limbs may reinforce the physical and emotional importance of hands, it also reminds us that not everyone navigates life with the use of their hands. And this brings about another possible analysis of the appearance of severed hands in stories and legends. Many of us take our hands and the function of our hands for granted. How would you feel about the implications being made by a story that someone who lacks a hand is seen as scary, evil, and monstrous? Let's read some more from Scott White's paper. "People are distrustful of individuals who have lost a hand because they are viewed as community outsiders. The severed hand itself represents a threat because it could taint objects or individuals with some kind of contagion, either with legitimate bacterial or viral disease that thrives on dead tissues, or some sort of disability contagion. Individuals with impairment are perceived by society as less functional and therefore treated as less human than the normal person. Severed hand legends reflect negative perceptions of the disabled within American informal culture. Disability scholars have noted that narratives featuring the disabled often conflate mental illness, mental disability, and physical disability. Paul Longmore identified a number of characters in television and movies whose physical disability, usually scarring or an amputated limb, translated into criminal actions, monstrousness, or jealousy of the able-bodied. And other scholars have noted that the social structures that surround disability and lead to exclusion are often present in cases of mental illness as well. In each of these cases, people with mental or psychological disability are treated as other from the, quote, normal population, leading to motifs of instability and violence, or, alternatively, heroism if they can overcome their disability. Severed hand legends reflect negative perceptions of the disabled within American informal culture," end quote. Folklorist Linda Deeg calls it the natural dread of the handicapped. Of course, this unconscious fear of illness and disability is demonstrated in so many narratives throughout history and is still heavily employed today. All you need to do to make a character scary, unsettling, or possibly inhuman is to give them some sort of quote-unquote impairment. And punishment in many stories and folktales, including the one we mentioned earlier, the Oniate or Dry Fingers, is employed in the form of inflicting physical disability, such as blindness. There's much to think about when it comes to hands and the stories in which they appear, whether they are urban legends or supernatural encounters. All the more reason I find them intriguing and enigmatic. I have bundles of more stories and experiences to read, so we'll inevitably be back again with more one day. For now, let's go out on a folktale. This is an Irish folktale, and this version I'm going to read was also featured in one of the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark books. It was originally collected by British folklorist Marie Clothild Balfour in 1891. It's called The Dead Hand. The village huddled on the edge of a vast swamp. As far as one could see, there were soggy meadows, holes filled with black water, and glistening sheets of wet, spongy peat. Skeletons of giant trees, snags, the people called them, rose up out of the muck, their dead branches reaching out like long, twisted arms. During the day, the men in the village cut the peat and hauled it home to dry and sell for fuel. But when the sun went down and the wind, sighing and moaning, came in from the sea, the men were quick to leave. Strange creatures took over the swamp at night, and some even came into the village. That's what everyone said. People were so afraid they would not go out alone after dark. Young Tom Pattinson was the only person in the village who did not believe in these creatures. On his way home from work, he'd whisper to his friends, "There's one," and would jump out, and they would jump and run. And Tom would laugh and laugh. Finally, some of his friends turned on him. "If you know so much," they said, "go back into the swamp some night and see what comes of it." "I'll do it," Tom said. "I work out there every day. Not once have I ever seen anything to frighten me. Why should it be different at night? Tomorrow night, I'll take my lantern and walk out to the willow snag. If I get scared and run, I'll never make fun of you again." The next night, the men went to Tom Pattinson's house to see him on his way. Thick clouds covered the moon. It was the blackest of nights. When they arrived, Tom's mother was pleading with him not to go. "I'll be all right," he said. "There's nothing to be afraid of. Don't be foolish like the rest." He took his lantern and, singing to himself, headed down the spongy path towards the willow snag. Some of the young men wondered if Tom wasn't right. Maybe they were afraid of things that did not exist. A few decided to follow him and see for themselves, but they stayed far behind in case he ran into trouble. They were sure they saw dark shapes moving about, but Tom's lantern kept bobbing up and down, and Tom's songs kept floating back to them, and nothing happened. Finally, they caught sight of the willow snag. There was Tom standing in a circle of light, looking this way and that. All of a sudden, the wind blew out his lantern, and Tom stopped singing. The men stood stock still in the blackness, waiting for something awful to happen. The clouds shifted, and the moon came out. There was Tom again, only now he had his back pushed up against the willow snag, and he had his arms out in front of him, as if he were fighting something off. From where the men stood, it looked like dark shapes were swirling in around him. Then the clouds covered the moon again. Once more, it was black as pitch. When the moon came out again, Tom was hanging onto the willow snag with one arm. His other arm was stretched out in front of him, as if something was pulling it. It looked to the men as if a rotting, moldy hand with no arm, a dead hand, had grabbed Tom's hand. With one final wrench, whatever had hold of Tom jerked him into the muck. That's what the men said. When the clouds blotted out the moon once more, the men turned and ran through the blackness towards the village. Again and again they lost the path and fell into the muck and water holes. In the end, they crawled back on their hands and knees, but Tom Pattinson was not with them. In the morning, the people searched everywhere for Tom. Finally, they gave him up for lost. A few weeks later, towards evening, the villagers heard a cry. It was Tom's mother. She was rushing down the path from the swamp, shouting and waving. When she was sure the villagers had spotted her, she turned and ran back. Off they went after her. They found young Tom Pattinson by the willow snag, groaning and gibbering as if he had lost his mind. He kept pointing with one hand at something only he could see. Where his other hand should have been, there was nothing but a ragged stump oozing blood. The hand had been ripped clean off. Everybody said it was the dead hand that had done it, but nobody really knows. Nobody will ever know, except Tom Pattinson. And he never spoke another word again. So there you have it. It's a good story. It's a creepy story. I know I'm not the only one who enjoyed these scary story collections as a kid and their creepy-ass illustrations. So what can we glean from this story now after reading some from that essay about severed hands and folk tales? The antagonist in the story is a severed hand, a dead hand. And it, in turn, robs the main character, the foolish Tom Pattinson, of his own hand. So what's to fear? Is it death? Is it a fear of mortality, since it was a dead and rotted hand? And this did take place in a peat bog, and particularly Irish peat bogs are known to be, I wouldn't say filled, but they're known to contain dead bodies, people who were the victims of murders or perhaps some kind of rituals. So, was this the dead hand of someone who had drowned in the peat bog? If we are to go with what was said in the essay or the thesis paper, that severed hands express perceived loss of humanity and legend, if Tom Pattinson was robbed of his hand, is he now essentially dead, even if he's still alive, but he's missing a hand and he never speaks again? Is he as good as dead? And the personal experiences, the supernatural encounters when it comes to hands, these are disembodied hands. Sometimes they appear kind of like dead flesh. A lot of times they're very odd colors, red, pink, green. What are they? Are they some type of supernatural entity? If we're going with some kind of psychic projection, what would it mean to see a disembodied hand? Because these are fairly common experiences. I mean, I have found so many stories, so many that we're going to have to come back another day reading more stories because I have so many more and I find them fascinating. I do. I think it's so strange, and even stranger that it's somewhat common. And if you find it as interesting as I do, please let me know. If you have your own hand story, let me know. If you have your own hand theories, I'd love to hear it. But until next time, thank you so much for joining me. I really, really appreciate it. And I hope you have a pleasant rest of your evening. I'll see you soon. Good night. All right, Goblin popping in here. Thank you again for tuning in. I'm sorry for the delay in our regularly scheduled program, but hopefully you got something out of this. Let me know if you did. I do have a few other leftovers recorded at this point, which I'll probably save for now, and you know, we'll see what happens and record some more as I go. But I will be back soon, hopefully next week. And yeah, so until next time, take care.